Hey guys, welcome to episode 38 of the JV Club. This episode is being released on Thanksgiving Day. I want to thank everybody who has just supported the podcast so far. You guys, you know I'm crazy about you. Tess Rafferty was a great guest. I think we put together a nice Thanksgiving-esque episode, albeit unintentionally for the most part, except at the end. But I want to give some Thanksgiving shout outs to people who sent me emails. That includes Liz Z, Pierre Jerome, Ashley S, Sam P. On Facebook, I want to thank Caroline J, Corinne, Tamara, Jenny S, Jamie. I want to thank on Twitter, Nissa, CatsMeow05, Maura, Kaylee, more people on the Facebook page, Oz, Alexander P, Paul L, Tammy C, Suzanne V, Alyssa H, Sean A. On iTunes, I want to thank, yeah, that's right, iTunes, guys, Thetea 1, Sparkord, Stern Life, Laura Revillian, Liza T, Carolina, and Kat. And then I also want to just let you guys know that a very funny and cool guy, Jonathan Dunn, has a book that is out that you should absolutely check out. It's at jonathanwdunn.com. If you're a fan of comedy and good literature, you may find yourself a fan of this book. And without further ado, I'd love to get into the episode with Tess. As always, guys, super grateful to have you. Certainly feeling extra grateful, the courtesy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys have a lovely holiday if you celebrate it. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Okay, bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, everybody knows I like to start out by talking about the weather. That's not the case, but lately I have been wanting to talk about the weather because I love this weather. This is some of my favorite weather out there.
Of all the weathers we get in Los Angeles.
Of all our different weathers.
Of the three different weathers.
Tess, what's your favorite weather?
You know, I like this. I think it's a nice. I think it's a nice change. I like all weather. I think. I mean, I dig this weathers. I dig this. You know, I miss snow certainly since I've been in Los Angeles for so long.
From where?
Boston.
What if you're like Tucson?
Yeah.
No. I'm from Tucson, Tess. It doesn't snow that much. You're not going to fool anybody.
It's early. I got to be honest. Like, I'm really starting to dig the really just hot, like, swimming weather, like, oh, in my life.
I can't do it.
It's what about it can't you do?
It just reminds me of all my summers growing up in Tucson and just being too hot to do anything. And I think I was just kind of a bummed out kid a lot of the time when I was in Tucson. And so I sort of have like opposite seasonal affective disorder of what most people have, which is when it's like hot, I just get bummed out. And when it's like this, I'm in a really good mood, and this is when I most love to ride my bike. I was supposed to play tennis today, and I'm very sorry that that's not going
to
happen.
I was supposed to play tennis today, too.
You were?
Well, I'm still might.
Do you think the courts will be dry? Because it seems so moist.
They said I should call back at noon.
Where do you go?
I go to the Weddington courts in the Valley. I live in the Valley, so I go to the Weddington courts over in Whitsun and Ventura.
Okay.
So they said they thought it might be dry enough if it doesn't keep raining, so we'll
see. Interesting. I just feel like on a day like this, everything stays moist because there's no sun to really bake it out.
I do too. And who wants to pick up the ball when it's all kind of gross and wet?
Gooey and squishy.
Yeah.
And now you probably actually really play tennis, whereas I just like to, I sort of volley and rally because I like just running around trying to get the ball. I'm not so good with like serving and playing full games and sets.
I'm not either. And I'm with you. Chris and I have been taking tennis lessons for about a year and a half with a tennis instructor. And he's always like, let's just play on our own. I'm like, I like a tennis instructor because I really just want to hit a ball. That's all I want to do. And I want a guy to lob it at me. And I just want to keep hitting it back. I'm totally with you.
It's so satisfying. Maybe if I played my whole life, you know, I would be more competitive in that way. But I also feel like, I just feel like I get better exercise if I'm just like running around hitting it.
Yeah. I really like, I think of an instructor as a human ball machine. Yeah. Is really what he
is.
Oh,
God, yeah.
But plus, like, I don't know. I can't get competitive about things because I'll get too competitive.
I understand that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm like, I can't. I don't play poker with friends. I don't do any of that stuff.
I have a couple of friends who are sort of like the friends who get kind of teased about being the overly competitive game night friends, where like everyone loves them because they're great at playing games, but there's a sense of sort of like it could go bad, like south, it could break bad at any moment. Like it's really fun and like high stakes, sort of like even high stakes like celebrity or charades, but there is a sense of I really hope that somebody doesn't get in a fight over like
my husband and I, back when he was still my boyfriend, we were playing Trivial Pursuit with another couple once, and we're not game people. We don't really have a lot of game friends. I think somebody had given it to me as a gift, and this couple come over and they see it and they're like, let's play Trivial Pursuit. And so the husband is a whiz. The husband is getting every single answer right. And the wife's just this like really silly, like lighthearted. She's just getting drunk. And so she's like, basically we're playing teams, but she thinks her team is winning even though she's really contributing nothing to it. And she's just sitting there laughing and gloating. And meanwhile, I'm like, you know, my boyfriend and I are fairly smart people. Every time I have the right answer, he goes, that's not it. And he answers and it's wrong. Every time he has the right answer, I'm like, no, that's not it. And I answer and it's wrong. Like, we can't get it together. And they're just like, just beating us. And we're like, what? You know, this isn't fair. She's dumb. He's, you know, she's not dumb. She's drunk, you know? Yeah. And like, this guy was just like the human, you know, human computer. And so it was just miserable.
And which, by the way, Trivial Pursuit, first of all, I haven't thought about Trivial Pursuit in a long time. And when you just said Trivial Pursuit, it really made me appreciate the name Trivial Pursuit is so snobby sounding.
Yeah.
It's a great name. Like, it's a great game name. They did a really nice job. Everybody likes trivia questions, but suddenly Trivial Pursuit sounds like as kind of snobby of a game as it was, considering that they're like, you know, board games like Clue or like card games and stuff. And I could never, I mean, I don't know what would happen if I tried to play a game of Trivial Pursuit now, but certainly like when it was all the rage and my dad had it and I would try to like dabble when I was a kid, those questions were hard.
Oh, the kids' questions were hard.
Right?
Yeah, and you have to, if you play the real way, you have to actually be on one of those specific spots to get the, like, to get the actual question, you know? So you got to move, and then you got to keep getting questions right to keep moving to the actual spots where you can get your little wedge. I mean, it's such a weird thing to think about now when we have video games and people don't. It's such a low-tech thing. Like, you had this little thing, and they had these wedges. It's not even like people, like you said, with
Clue. The little plastic-colored wedges.
Yeah.
It's like, and I always liked pink because it was entertainment, and that was the best I could offer. I will know the answers to 1 out of 10 of these entertainment questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think 9 out of 10, they were like, Abbott and Costello. Like, it was so dated. You know, it was like dated for that. It was like historic. You know, it was all very... like historical sports, historical.
Sarah Bernhardt.
Yeah. Exactly.
I will take Gibson.
Who was William Shakespeare's predecessor? Yeah. No. Yeah. Are we going that far back?
That's.
Exactly.
That's not entertaining.
Did you ever do like, do you ever do like bar trivia nights? Because I always kind of liked the idea of that sort of, my friends of mine, in fact, my old roommate, Barbie, who will probably no doubt come back up into the conversation when we talk about this book that you have. But she's like, you know, she was one of those sort of San Francisco, like, every Tuesday I go to this Irish pub and I play trivia and, you know, it becomes a thing and it sort of feels like Cheers when you walk in the door and everyone else yells Norm and all that. And I never did that. Did you ever do that?
No, they're always, you know, all the trivia nights are always in places like Silver Lake and Eagle Rock, which I do like to go to, but I don't live really near. And, you know, it's not like my neighborhood bar and stuff. And most of the things, the problem with bars is that I don't like the alcohol they serve at bars. Like, I'm so snobby about... I'm just so snobby about like what kind of wine I drink and I can't drink beer anymore. I don't know if you found this, like, it's just, I'd like drink one beer and I can't wear my rings the next day. You know, it's like,
well, let me tell you this. I'm gluten intolerant, and in a very real way, like it makes me physically throw up and stuff.
Oh God.
And so, I can't drink beer because of the, like, the barley and the hops in it. And, So I can drink gluten-free beer, but it's kind of not good.
Yeah.
And I also, I've also just sort of evolved out of drinking for whatever reason as I've gotten older. And I think part of it is like each different kind of booze has started to have a different kind of negative impact on me. It's like wine makes me wake up in the middle of the night sweaty and disoriented with heartburn.
Yeah.
Beer, I'm allergic to. And even before I knew I was allergic, it was the same thing, except for me, it wasn't the next morning. It was like instant bloat.
Oh God, yeah.
And pretty much any hard alcohol dehydrates me so fast that my contact lenses just turn into dry discs on my red eyes.
Oh my God.
So I've just sort of like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, it's just
so I don't really drink anymore. So for me too, trivia at a bar would be like I'm drinking club soda while everyone else is getting drunk, and that's not always that fun.
I'm probably paying like $6
for it. Then everybody's that girl playing Trivial Pursuit with you, and
yeah.
I'm you going, this isn't really that fun.
Yeah, no, this isn't a good time for me.
Yeah. What board games did you like to play when you were little? Did you have your favorites, your go-tos?
Did
you maybe not even like playing board games?
No, I did. I liked Life, and I liked Clue.
Clue is so good.
Clue is fun because there's like a story happening, yeah. I think. It's not like who likes Sorry? You know, Sorry is nothing.
I've never played Sorry.
I can't tell you what it is.
No,
like,
I can't either.
You know, it's some
Which is
sort
the one
of,
that has, is that the one that has like the dice inside the like plastic bubble that you like pop
isn't that
down? And
Yahtzee
then,
or Boggle or something?
Perhaps.
Or both Yahtzee and Boggle, maybe?
I'm realizing right now how board game illiterate I am. I can speak to Candyland. I can speak to Clue.
Right. No, well, Candyland's great. You know, and you know, in Life even, like you have a storyline with Life.
It's possible. I've never played Life.
You've never played Life?
Does
you know, you get
like
the little
2
car
years to play.
It is kind of long to play, actually.
It's like, it's like the version of online games now, where you're like, I built a world for myself.
It was a little like that. It's a little like The Sims, because you do go through, you graduate from college, and then you you roll the dice and choose your career based on that, and then you get a yearly salary, so that every time you pass a payday, you know. So it's really kind of developed into
so
a cast
boring.
System really
yeah.
quickly. But it's you know, amazing. You get, and then at the end of it, you get paid for each kid you have. Like, because if you land on a spot, you might may or may not have a kid or twins.
This
or something.
Sounds very socialist. I appreciate that aspect of it.
Yeah, it's really
collecting your social security and your
collecting your
welfare.
Getting paid per child and
yeah.
stuff. It's like the opposite of China. Yeah,
that's exactly.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the slogan they're going to go through on the reboot. You know, Life. It's
the opposite of China. I couldn't love that more.
Yeah.
Oh, and Monopoly is a classic. Monopoly, I had trouble with too because of the sort of sense of greed about it. Like I was very aware of. I think I was uncomfortable with my own. Speaking of like the competitiveness of it, there was something uncomfortable about like the buying and selling of things and the money. And I think I appreciated the money too much, like wishing it were real, like really having an awareness of like, God, it would be great if this were real money.
Right.
And feeling maybe a little guilty and weird about that.
Well, I think Monopoly too is one of those games that have been around so long that no one really knew all the rules to it. And everybody like, it was almost like a regional thing. Everybody had their own like weird way that they played in their family or something. Like you'd have like one card that people would be like, oh, we don't worry about that, or we don't play the railroads.
Listen, we just don't play the railroads here.
Yes, there was something like really strange, and nobody like, you know, everybody, it seemed like, you know, some people put their money in the middle, and if you land, like, oh, when you pay your fines, you don't put them back in the bank, you put them in the middle, and then whoever lands on this spot gets them, and you're like, okay. Like, it was such a weird, you know, and I think
customs, the local customs of Monopoly.
The local customs, and I think it just was like whatever parents didn't want to have to deal with their kids. Like, they were just like, oh, this game is so involved, and the houses and the hotels, and they would just start lying to their kids about, like, what these rules were, and then it just got passed down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I always found with Monopoly.
And let me ask you this other question, because this has been on my mind recently, and by the way, I can't preface it with more importance for something that is completely not an important question. But I was having a conversation in my salon group, which is a discussion group that I have once a month, and we got into the topic of Red Vines versus Twizzlers, and there was an argument made that it's an East Coast, West Coast thing. That like Twizzlers are more East Coast and Red Vines are maybe more West Coast, or vice versa. Now I can't remember.
Oh, wow. I, you know.
But you're from Boston, I'm from Arizona. So I grew up liking kind of Twizzlers more, I think. Even though they just taste like plastic.
Yeah, I can't really, you know, it's so funny. I'm not a candy person. I like sweets, but I'm so much more of like a chocolate like or
bakery
cake.
Or like,
yeah,
bakery,
like cookie.
I wanted it all. Yeah. All of it. All of it.
I just wanted everything bad for
Maybe
me.
With the exception of like Good and Plenty's, which I later came around to.
Right. Yeah. That's so weird. I don't, licorice still, I can't stand. It's just not.
I've said this on the podcast. I can't believe this is the second time I've talked about licorice on my podcast. Less than 40 episodes out. But black licorice, I hated my entire life, as many do. And then my friend Cole one day was eating licorice. And I took a piece of it, and it was like some cost plus, like special German salted licorice.
Oh.
And everything about it tasted the same. I think this was a Donna and Danielle episode that I talked about this, but everything about it tasted exactly the same as when I used to hate it, but I just like made the decision, like, I like this now. Which is weird.
A weird process.
Yeah,
even
like,
after
I guess
hating
I like this
it,
now.
You were like, I'm gonna try this again, even though I hated this. All my life. I'm just going to give it another shot.
And then I just decided to like it. And then I really liked it. And then now licorice is made with wheat flour. So I haven't been able to have it
you
anymore.
You came so far I only know. To be.
I know. I finally came around to it. And then a couple of years later, toodaloo.
It's just taken away from you.
Toodaloo.
Just think about all those years you wasted hating it.
I know.
Yeah, that you could have been
That's what
it.
I'm going to think about on my deathbed. Some women think I spend too much time worrying about my hips. I will think I not only spend too much time worrying about my hips, but also I didn't appreciate licorice until it was too late. Nearly.
Well, it's easy to worry about your hips in this town, I think, because it's like nobody has it. Them.
Tell me about
you
it.
Know? And they don't make clothes for... this is totally getting into girl issues, but they don't make clothes for hips. I don't wear pants.
I don't really care for pants much either.
I can't find a pair that like my waist is too small. My waist to hip proportion is just not made for pants. But
yeah,
dresses,
and also that's something that like women talk about. Like, you can read about that in a magazine, so it's not like it's a secret that people can't find pants that fit well.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know? Everybody knows that that's a problem.
And they're like, we're still gonna make pants the way we're making them.
Yeah, there's like issues of magazines dedicated to like we'll help you find a pair of pants that doesn't cripple your ego.
Yeah, I know. It's like nope. That's
It's crazy.
You know, it's really nuts. And I finally kind of came around to it. I was buying a bathing suit bottom from Victoria's Secret, I think, last year or something. And I can't remember. I think they were like, I think I got a large. Like, I think that was the size I was comfortable with, was a large in the bathing suit bottoms. And, you know, I mean, I'm not like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like having a huge issue with it. And then I finally was like, you know what? If I'm a large, do you know how much of the country, like, this isn't my problem. Like, I've decided maybe that's just escapism. Right. But I'm kind of like, I shouldn't. That means that anyone bigger than me, and not like I'm so small or anything, but like there's a significant I'm not a, people can't see me. I'm not a big person.
Yeah.
You know, that there's a significant portion of this country who can't even fit into a large. Like, I don't even know where they're buying their bathing suit bottoms. Not a Victoria's Secret. Yeah. Like, and it's not like I'm not a plus size model, people. I swear. I don't have a weight problem. Yeah. Maybe a small one. Anyway, like, I'm just sort of like, you know what? I finally kind of came around to like, this isn't my problem. Like, I'm not going to be beaten down by the fact that I had to buy a size I'm not comfortable with.
I totally hear what you're saying, and I agree with that. And I also feel like, you know, there's so much going on. I just don't even know how to. I don't even know how to. We talked about it a little bit on the Allison Rosen podcast episode, because Allison was you know, a kind of a medically overweight kid, in the sense that like her doctor, you know, her pediatrician said, you know, she needs to go on a diet when she was really young. And I think weight is such a circular issue in this country. You know, it's so and there is also a sense of like, we're still struggling so much. Nobody can argue that we have a very high, absurdly high obesity rate, and that, you know, we're killing ourselves as a country en masse in that way. But I also feel like it's just something that we can't figure out. Like, emotionally, I think we can't figure it out to help each other. And also just like, nobody can decide on what's healthy and normal anyway, because you have, you know, the entertainment industry kind of pumping out one idea, and then you have
Yeah,
I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I just feel like. Well, but no, because I think the, because I think now what's happened is, and I think maybe Allison said this too, is that now it starts to feel like everything else is okay. Everything else is sort of off the table in terms of being bigoted, but it's still okay to be bigoted about fat people because now, or overweight people. I'm using the term fat as the person who's being a bigot, by the way, guys. But that you. That now you have the excuse of like, our country is obese. What is wrong with us? Look at all these fat people who can't get it together. Like, it sort of feels like instead of treating it compassionately and trying to figure out like what is going on, you know, with yeah. big food and with the way that we self-medicate with food and the way that we don't have, a, you know, whatever our relationship is to exercise and all that kind of stuff. It feels instead sometimes like it's just creating an excuse for people to still be horrible about people who are even a little bit chubby or whatever
right,
that means.
Right.
It's like, what's normal anymore and what's healthy? And like, you don't have to be a, you know what I mean? I just really struggle with that. I think a lot of people do.
Well, it's certainly, you know, nobody's sort of like looking at the other end of the spectrum going, you know, I think everyone's like, okay, well, it's too, you know, I think we are talking about the fact that it's okay, well, that's not healthy, or, you know, that, you know, it's not good to be that, you know, to have this much body fat, or it's not healthy to be, you know, this much overweight or whatever you want to call it. But nobody's going in the opposite direction and really doing anything about, like, you know what's also not healthy? Anorexia, you know, laxatives, like, you know, these people who look so frighteningly thin. And then wasn't there a thing where there was some model on a runway who was like crazy, scary looking, or maybe it was on Top Model. There was that really thin girl at like a 16-inch waist or something. Mm-hmm. And then everybody was like, there was like some like weird skinny backlash where like all these skinny people are like, we're just skinny. Get off our case or something. Like, they were,
you know,
like,
it's so you know? It's tough, man. It's tough. I mean, people do. Certainly people talk about being too thin, but it's not as pervasive, I guess. And it's not, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we don't have to talk about weight stuff. We've talked about it before on the podcast a little bit, but just what you brought up in the idea of like, yeah, when you go shopping and feeling like, oh, like I like. Yeah. Listen, I've bought large size underwear, and I'm not. You know,
no.
I'm
you're
sort of a small
super
person
thin and everything.
But
yeah.
And there's that moment of like, oh, I guess, you know, I guess I'm large.
Yeah.
I guess it's not a size anymore. I guess it's a type. Like, now I'm a large person.
Yeah.
And like, that's not cool. No one should have to feel that way. Nor should anyone who's larger than I am have to feel. I don't know. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
No,
or we feel that way and we don't give a shit. Like, okay.
Yeah, it's just a size. I mean, I don't,
listen,
I don't
I'm
know.
Healthy,
you,
I'm
like,
happy. Da, 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 you
I'm
know?
Sure like
story.
You. It's like I have every size of clothing in my closet, and it would all fit me at any
for
one
sure.
time. Like it would all fit me at the same time.
And please, if you go vintage shopping, like, I'm like a size 16.
Oh,
I exaggerate not. You know, like, vintage size clothes, like, we have vanity sizing in the United States. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, if you go back and you put on like a dress from the 50s or whatever, I'm like, oh, I'm a size 16. Okay.
I've heard in Beverly Hills that in some stores, they will actually just sew a small size into the dress when the woman buys it.
Fantastic.
They will find a size that fits her and then literally just
that does not surprise
I,
me.
Somebody
in the
told
least.
Me that. I don't know the validity of that statement, but somebody said that they will just sew a size 2 tag into it.
It seems entirely plausible, if not likely.
And I, you know what? I would shop at that store. Like, if I was a rich person or whatever, I'm sure it's expensive. I would go, yeah, why not?
You walk know? Away feeling like, because that's what matters in life, guys. That's what matters.
I know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your adolescence. Let's talk about you're from Boston and
I actually grew up in Delaware.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
So where do we find you if we look at it like a 13-year-old Tess?
God, I guess I was doing, you know, I was doing a lot of theater and stuff. I always did a lot of theater as a kid and was very, very goth, very into Morrissey and the Smiths.
I love
and
everything I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Everybody who listens to the podcast knows I was very much on board.
Right. And yeah. The Cure. I just was listening to The Cure actually on the way over here. They came up on random and I was like, oh, I love this song. It's from Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me.
Yeah. That's a good album.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We've had a real, I was talking to someone guys, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, but maybe like April Richardson or Jen Kirkman about Disintegration, and that was like a life-changing album for us. And I still get, from time to time, I'll get tweets or Facebook messages from fans of the podcast who are like, I just listened to Disintegration for the first time, or thanks for reminding me how much I love that album. I haven't listened to it in a while, and they put it back in rotation. But
that's so great.
Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me's good too.
There's certain albums I can't listen to anymore or as much. It's almost like too nostalgic.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't agree more.
It was like that for me for a long time with that album, in fact. And,
really?
And that was one of the reasons I hadn't listened to it in so long, is that it really felt like it belonged to 13-year-old me.
Yeah.
And that I was like borrowing it back, and it just felt weird. But then recently when I gave it another spin, I was like, you know what? I can connect to the nostalgia and I can appreciate this music for the music, and it was a nice sort of like shaking hands with that, you know?
Right.
What else would be, what would be like that for you?
Well, you know, I went through a huge Doors phase when I was in college, like humongous, ridiculous Doors phase where I was out here visiting a friend in the LA area. And before I went over to Europe, you know, because I went to college in Boston, but I was out in LA, and I took water from Venice Beach, because, you know, that's where Jim Morrison hung out. And I brought it all the way to Paris with me and poured it on his grave at Père Lachaise. Like, that's how crazy obsessed I was.
Okay. Love that.
Right. Now, like, they would never let me on a plane with water.
I know.
Venice.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say those days are over.
Those days are totally
over. Venice to, I don't know how you would get away with that. You'd have to smuggle it in your suitcase, I guess.
I mean, I did anyway put it in my suitcase, but still, just this, like, you know, bottle, Gatorade bottle of stank
that is
water.
So sweet, though. How romantic.
It was really.
I hated Jim Morrison, but how really romantic.
I was really just into their stuff, obviously, and I almost can't listen to it any, even though I still think that, you know, most of the music's, you know, most of the music's really good and stuff. I don't know. It's just like a weird.
I totally get
that. Like a block I have almost.
I liked the Doors music well enough. I just had this, I don't know where I got it from. To be honest with you, it was probably like the movie The Doors or something. I don't even know. But, or maybe it was my dad. Somebody somewhere along the line, because I know, I would love to say, you know, we all like to pretend like whatever snobbery we have, like we cultivate it on our own. But
yeah.
But, you know, most likely just someone I respected at some point in my life was like, he was a scoundrel and like, you know, a drunk or whatever. But I was so dismissive of Jim Morrison in the same way that I was, frankly, and I've gotten a lot of flack for this, I was dismissive of Kurt Cobain in the same way. I was just like, these guys who just want everyone to think they're so poetic and they're so tortured and like they're so deep. And who's to say they weren't? I mean, I'm wrong. Everybody else is right. There's a reason these people became famous and touched so many people. And like people were so in love with their poetry and their music and their contribution and stuff. But for whatever reason, I was snobby about that. And mind you, I was not snobby about other people that, you know, somebody else would say, are you kidding me with that? You couldn't get on board for Kurt Cobain, but you liked blank. I'm trying to think of who that would
be. Well, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, just because you became famous and even like, I mean, I'm sure Kesha's touched people and she's famous. And, you know, I think it's fine to be dismissive of Kesha. You know, you just never know. I know, Kurt, I never really got the Nirvana thing either. I was like, oh, the music's fine. Like, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like out and out. I wasn't like, I hate Nirvana. It was nothing like that. I just never felt like I liked Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
I didn't love them either. Yeah. I liked Soundgarden a lot. I loved Chris Cornell. I did think that he was kind of incredibly sexy and wonderful, but
I like the whole single soundtrack thing. Like it was all like just sort of, I don't know, it was like fine. Like
by and large I agree with you. I just wasn't passionate about it the same way. Do you wonder if it's like, because it's almost like, what am I trying to say? I could talk about music for hours and hours, but here's where I'm going with this, maybe.
Oh my God, you have to have Christy Stratton man on.
You know I love my Christy Stratton man. Yeah, she loves to talk about, especially the 80s, right?
Yeah, but she's also into real classic rock too, so there's a lot of 70s in there probably.
Yeah, I do have to have Christy do the podcast. I've talked to her about doing it. I gotta have her on. And I didn't, and I know that I could have had you guys both on, but I would much rather have you on one on one.
That's awesome.
But I hear, okay, so what I'm trying to say is, I wonder if grunge for me came so close on the heels of like me sort of making my transformation from just being like a kid into being like kind of a goth teenager that I couldn't apply the same enthusiasm because I could kind of, I'd already spent it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I had my transformation from loving, you know, I still love Peter Gabriel and Talking Heads and stuff, but my transformation from loving like Peter Gabriel and the Police and Talking Heads when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, because those were big bands for my dad, and I was very much influenced by him because he was like a cool hipster in that mm-hmm. way, to kind of discovering my own music,
yeah.
which was goth. Like, my dad had no time for Depeche Mode or The Cure, you know what I mean? So to kind of like separate myself from him in that way and to have that discovery and to start dressing completely differently and wearing black lipstick and taking drugs mm-hmm. and all that stuff, that happened, and then a few years later, or a couple years later, grunge hit, and I kind of feel like, what was I going to do? Become obsessed with that then?
Right.
Because I had just been obsessed with something else. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I totally... Well, I have two things to say about that. The first is that I think that music is just... You either hear something... Like, for me, like I think about Elvis Costello is one of the things that I think about this with. And the B-52s, ironically, are another one, where the first time I heard their music... Violent Femmes, like, I was like, this is what I've always wanted my music to sound like. Like, I have that reaction.
Pixies?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I just think of Violent Femmes, yeah. that sort of realm of...
And there's just certain bands that I'm like, the minute I hear... When I first heard the first song on Armed Forces, I was like, I remember going, oh my God, this is what I want my music to be like. And yeah. so I think you either have it or you don't for something. But I also do find that, like, something you said really made me think, because it's, like, I just find, like I don't have the energy, it seems. Not even the energy. It's not like I'm so old, but it's, like, I don't get passionate about anything. I can't anymore. Like, I can't, you know, there are a whole movies I've wanted to see for an entire year that I haven't made it to see. Like, there's just not a lot of... You know, when I think,
but what about like a really great series, a really great television series? Because it's so easy, because it's just like right in front of you at home,
and you can save them up on your TiVo or like rent the DVD or something. Or
but I hear you, I do feel like, God, what happened to the person who was like, I gotta see that person in concert, or I gotta go to that movie the day it opens, or I've gotta. Yeah. I do feel like I'm sort of like, oh, I can't. I have so much going on. I can't put another pressure on myself that's a social one or a sort of an entertainment pressure to like rush out and get something. But I do still have bands that, like, even bands that are more recent for me, recent discoveries for me, where I find out, like, if, like, there are certain bands where I'm like, I have been waiting for this album to drop, and that yeah. feels good, because it kind of does connect me with that young person.
With being a Sunday Bloody Sunday mm-hmm. was a song I heard where I was like, that was another one, like, where I was like, oh my God, this is the most awesome thing I've ever heard. But yeah, it does. I mean, I don't want to feel like either just old or indifferent, you know, or old and indifferent.
Right.
But it is like your life is busy. It's hard, you know, to just sort of, you know, get it all together some days.
Yeah.
And really, you know, so many bands come and we're like, oh, we would have loved to have seen them, but oh well. And then next thing you know, 2 years goes by and they come again, and
yeah,
you know.
There isn't the same sense of urgency, I guess. But okay, so let's go back to, sorry, I really got off on the music tangent, but so so you were doing a lot of theater, and what's your family like? Are you an only child? Do you have siblings? Were
no.
your parents together? Do they split?
I have a younger brother, and no, my parents are still together, interestingly enough. I don't know what to say about it. We were never a sports family. No one in my family is particularly athletic or anything. So, there wasn't a lot of, pressure or encouragement to play sports,
yeah.
you know, which I guess really. Is a blessing and a curse, I suppose. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I mean, we don't have to really talk about
bad
that much
interview.
At all. No, not
I'm
at all.
I'm just trying to think of how it would, how it pertains to anything.
No, it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to tie into anything. I just like to sort of paint a picture so people have a sense of, you know, whether, you know, just kind of what your upbringing was like. It doesn't have to be anything serious. Or by the way, you also don't have to like talk about, you know,
doesn't have to turn into a therapy session.
Yeah, not at all. It's just I like to sort of see what the evolution is from people's teenagerhoods to where they are now in terms of like what they were excited about, or you know, what they were, what they're sort of, if they felt like they had goals or if they were sort of trying to still figure it all out. I mean, I have some people who kind of knew exactly who they were and what they wanted to do from a really young age, and then people who were like, I just thought I was going to be a scientist or I whatever. And
well, I think I did always want to, like, I don't know. I was like, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, Delaware gets a bad rap that is,
I don't know anything about it.
I'm always,
those,
by the way, like,
it's one of those states. I'm like, I don't.
It's like any other, it's like a suburb. I mean, the whole state is more or less like a suburb of Philadelphia or someplace, like, you know, not quite DC, but Baltimore, I guess. I don't, you know, it's not, it's funny. It's like the butt of jokes because nobody does know anything about it. But at the same time, it's like, it's just like any other place, but it was just, you know, so I don't feel like, oh, I grew up in the country of Nebraska, you know, in the, you know, backroads of Nebraska or something and had to leave. But it was like, no, it was a boring suburb, like lots of boring suburbs. And I just knew, like, I mean, I just, you know, I knew like that the minute I just wanted something different. Like I think that's what, you know, that's what always motivated me, was like, I want to be someplace more exciting than this. I want to be a place with, you know, whatever, just museums and culture and, you know, where you can see bands and, you know, like more of a city and things. So,
and on the East Coast, you're sort of closer to that geographically. It seems like small, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Growing up in Arizona, it's a long way to Los Angeles. It's long way to
anything.
New York. It's a long way to anything. It doesn't feel as, you know, like friends of mine and people. You know, we've had a lot of people from like the New York area on the podcast who have said, listen, I grew up on Staten Island. It still felt like New York was a million miles away. But, you know, I feel like there has to be maybe a different awareness somehow when you're like a train ride away from a really great sprawling metropolis.
And it's true. Like my husband grew up on Long Island, and, you know, there are people who never go into the city. And part of it's, you know, they just view the city as this scary place and nobody wants to go. And they just sit out there, you know. They spend all their lives without really ever going to the city for anything. And I think that's like, I think it is true. It's like, you're really close, but for some people, cities are scary places and stuff. It's so weird. It's so funny to think about. But, no, we just, you know, it's funny because, my brother and I, like, we're 2 out of 10 cousins, and, we're the only two who got out of the state.
Oh, wow.
And it's so bizarre to me to think about, you know, that out of the 10 of us were the only two who left. And I don't know, there's just like I said, I just always had this sort of wanderlust of looking for something outside of this, just cookie cutter suburb where, you know, I mean, it's so weird. Like, I'll tell you, explain it. Like, and I'm sure, everybody has the same experience, whatever suburb you're from. There was this girl I knew when I was like, I lived around the corner from her when I was in the 4th and 5th grade, you know, so whatever, we're 10 or 11. And she always had this crush on this guy. And, let's say his like last name is like Smith or something. And she always had this crush on him, except there's something really specific, something much more specific than Smith, just for the purposes of this story. And so because, you know, it's the type of place, Delaware is the type of place where, like, you know, you have known someone all your life and then your kids play together and are friends. And that's like kind of like the weirdness of it. I was on, you know, she went to school with my cousin and this girl I always knew. And I was on his wife's Facebook page. And not only are they all still friends, like I can see this woman and her are friends, but her last name is now Smith. Like, she married the guy that she had the crush on in the 4th or 5th grade. Like, she made it work. Like, it happened for her, yeah. You know? Like, I mean, that's craziness when you're 10 years old and you're like, I want to marry him someday. She did.
Yeah.
You know, like how
it
like,
is. It does feel it has that. It's sort of a beautiful small town romance to it.
I guess it is hard to know.
But there are people who listen to the podcast too. I don't want anybody who listens to the podcast to feel like they're listening to it and they're in Des Moines and like you know we're shitting on people who make the decision to stay where they're from. Because I do feel like, you know, I have friends who stayed in Tucson who were blissfully happy. And I totally respect that. It just isn't necessarily for everyone. And so there is something.
Oh, I don't doubt that they're all happier than I am, like on a regular basis. I do not doubt it for a moment. You know?
But it is beautiful. I mean, there is just something so interesting about like that insular of a kind of like, yeah, he was my whole world then. And so and that's what I felt like that sort of like this, the space I was operating in. And I just continued operating in that same space.
And it worked out. It paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Truman Show. You know what I mean? It's like the Truman Show.
It really is. It's my, you know, when I was a kid, I used to go through all my aunt's high school yearbooks. And now I go through her kids' Facebook pages. And it's all the same last names. Like their friends are the same last names as her friends did. It's just nuts. It's like,
I mean, it just makes me wonder if there's something about certain areas that maintain themselves in that way more than others. Like if a place were that sort of not great, it seems like more people would kind of be migrating in and out, almost like turnover at a job versus like a community that must be, I don't know. I want to believe that there's something like attractive enough about it that people just are like, yeah, I'm good here. You know, I've been watching, my sweetie and I have been watching, the 7-Up series and I, you know, I'm just so fascinated by people who, I don't know, there was one, I guess, that even just the 21, do you know what that is?
Yeah, no, okay. I've seen some of it. Yeah,
so the even just at 21, this is a while back, but one of the, like a couple of the different people who were like, that, you know, that they get asked, would you ever move outside of England? Or, you know, would you move outside of your hometown or whatever? And I think the answers, and those of you who've seen this can probably remember better than I can, but his answer was like, I don't, like, why would I?
Yeah.
Like, it's great. This is great here. Why would I want to go anywhere else? And that really resonated with me because I don't feel that way about it. That's not how I felt about growing up. And so it was this sort of, I mean, I know tons of people say that, but it, just hearing it in that moment really hit me like, oh God, yeah, sure. There are people who look at you like you're crazy when you say, would you ever go anywhere else? Like they would say, why? I've got it great here.
Yeah, and it's so. I was talking to a friend of mine who is, you know, she's a former comedian and writer and stuff, and you know, she actually lives in Rome now, but she's got two kids, so a lot of her life is, you know, taken up with her kids and stuff. But still, she still has this, you know, working as a writer and still performing and stuff like that. So she's got that, I guess what I'm saying is she's got that kind of a temperament. Like she's got like a temperament like you or me or whatever. And she was talking to a friend of hers back home, like a childhood friend or whatever. And she's like, it's probably easy being you, isn't it? And her friend's like, yeah, I think so. Like, I don't really think about it. And she's like, oh God. Cause we're tortured. We make too much out of things. We put emphasis on all sorts of weird priorities and make ourselves crazy with it.
Oh, it's so true.
You know,
it's so true. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's there are certainly major trade-offs to either, but if you're on the side where you're not realizing that it is a trade-off, probably you're in better shape.
You don't know. I mean, like yesterday I was like hoofing it up and down Sunset Junction with my book in hand, like just going to like boutiques, like places that kind of have like household gifts and stuff. Where
tell everybody the name of your book, because this is how Tess and I met, guys. I know that 40 minutes into a podcast, I probably should have explained more about why we know each other, but I feel that that's what Google and the description of the episode are for.
And I'm such a genius at marketing that I'm like, I don't even want to plug my own book. I'm like, oh, that'll seem really.
No, we can plug it together because I met Tess. She came on to the Huffington Post, to HuffPost Live, and we talked about her book, which is called
Recipes for Disaster.
Recipes for Disaster. And it was, we had a really lovely conversation about the sort of how fun it is to have the social gatherings and to enjoy playing hostess, even if you're somebody for whom many things go wrong.
Right. Or even if you don't have what, you know, everything, even if you're not a good cook, even if you don't feel like you've got a complete set of china, like, you know, I, our first Thanksgiving, we were talking about this last night, my husband and I, our first Thanksgiving in LA, 12 years ago, we cooked for 8 people and we didn't even have a table. We pushed 2 coffee tables together that didn't even, weren't even really the same height. So it was like this mind the gap situation with a tablecloth over it. And, you know, but you could still have great memories and great meals
those
together.
Are my, I think those are my best memories are those sort of cobbled together, like
just
raggle taggle stuff.
Just real, but really fun nights because it's all about who you're with. And sometimes it's like people you don't even talk to anymore and you're like, oh, I hate that person, but that was a really fun night. You know?
We'll always have that.
We'll always have that. We'll always have Thanksgiving.
Well, so, okay, so you were hoofing it around Central Junction.
So, yeah, so this book, that's it's a memoir of dinner parties and I've thrown and what went wrong and I have real tongue-in-cheek tips and some recipes in it and everything. And so I'm going to different like little, you know how in LA it's like a store shelves like might sell like some clothes and a baby gift and like three books and a candle.
Yeah. And 2 necklaces. And,
exactly.
Yeah, those are my favorite LA shops. And yes, Sunset Junction, guys, for those of you who don't know, the LA area is very hipster, kind of east side, Los Angeles, like great, like Intelligentsia coffee shop and like the cheese shop, but also, you know, the Vice store used to be there, like
right.
Vice magazine has a store. And so it is
and
very much
of
the
restaurants.
Kind of like, it is, it's a good idea for you to go to one of those places and go, oh, you have these like hipster men's clothing, but you also have like these cool lady tchotchkes. You should have my book here.
Right.
I thought
you know, the
idea.
Holidays are coming up.
Sure.
And you know, my book's at like on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and stuff, but you know, I just thought like, hey, these are places where, you know, obviously whoever my sales reps are in New York don't know about these places. So, you know, I'm just giving out books to like some of the shop owners and, you know, saying, listen, this is a great holiday book. If you're interested, just wanted to, you know, I gave them free copies and stuff. And I'm just thinking like, God, it never ends. You know, I mean, I didn't have to do that, but you know, I mean, and you know, but I'm like, no, I think this is a good idea. And it actually worked out. Like every store I went into was really supportive. They're like, do you want to have a signing here? Like everybody was really awesome.
I do love Sunset Junction for that.
Me too.
It's great. It supports the sort of, I mean, anything like that that feels, and craft fairs and stuff like that, anything that feels like it's supporting people who have dedicated themselves to being artists in some way or being artisans in some way.
I mean, have you ever been to Pull My Daisy?
Yeah, yeah. It's all local LA design.
No, that woman's so awesome. Like sometimes I'll walk in there and she's got a crib set up with her kid in it, which I just think is great. It's like, I'm a mom now. Here's my kid. And he must be in preschool now or something because I don't see him any. I was just in there yesterday. I don't see him anymore. But yeah. You know, it's just that great, great kind of vibe to it and stuff.
I totally agree. I totally love that. Speaking of books.
Yes.
I think we should address this book that you brought in because I'm very excited about
well,
it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And this is what I'll always say about Barbie is that I never stuck a finger down my throat because of Barbie. I have stuck a finger down my throat, but never because of Barbie. But I do think that she gets a bad rap. And this kind of ties into the conversation we were having is that I felt like Barbie to me, the book is a Barbie book, by the way. It's like a whole retrospective. It's called Barbie, Her Life and Times. And it's a book I had in my adolescence that I looked at many times.
To be clear, it's a retrospective, but it's not like it takes us up to the present. This still, like the retrospective still looks ancient to me.
Right. No, I think the book is from sometime in the 80s. It's the first half is a retrospective of like all the different Barbies from the first one through, you know, the 80s. And then the second half, and this is really brilliant here, they basically had some sort of exhibit where they had all the world's leading fashion designers design mm-hmm. for Barbie. So the whole second half is like, oh, here's a Perry Ellis sweater that he designed for Barbie. I'm like just reading off of it, like,
oh,
you know.
Fabulous.
They've got Yves Saint Laurent did a whole section in here and, you know, Keith Haring, you know, they have them all organized by country.
I love everything I'm
saying. They have the French designers. They have a Pucci Barbie, Diane von Furstenberg here. So it's really glamorous. Like right into this, she has nicer clothes than I do now.
Oh, for
basically,
sure. I mean, I'm
this.
Not saying not for sure. Like you have crappy clothes, but like those clothes are fabulous.
No, like yeah. So take a look at it. Here, I want you to see it because I see it all the time.
Yeah, I'm gonna flip through this.
And I just feel like, you know what? Barbie was really cool. And I feel like Barbie really aspired me to want to do something with my life in a sense, because she was a woman who lived in a fabulous house and she wasn't married. Like, she obviously, and she had a thousand careers. She was like an astronaut and a vet and a supermodel and a high school student.
Yeah.
But it was really like, don't you, I just feel like she gets a bad rap, but
I
she
think
kind
it's
of
an interesting. Yeah. I think it's one of those, ooh, look at Japanese version of Barbie. It's so anime.
Oh yeah. Right.
Look at her.
Oh, I know. And I love
so
those outfits
interesting.
Too.
I hope maybe we can take some snapshots of this and for the- and put it on the Facebook page. But what you're saying, I think, is that it is really interesting, because, I mean, obviously you made it as simple as you didn't stick your finger down your throat for because of Barbie, but you did for something else. Obviously, it's hard for me to leave that alone, because I want to know why you did and when that stopped. But we don't have to, again, we don't have to get into that if you don't want to. I'm just taking a picture of this one Japanese
of this
Barbie.
Fantastic Japanese anime Barbie. Yeah.
But I'll take a picture of the book too. But I agree with you that I feel like, you know, I can't, it's hard to pinpoint where our issues with our bodies come from. And I also, you know, I like to tout myself as like a bit of a tomboy, because I was such an avid like bike rider. And I think I wanted to be more like my dad than, you know, anybody. And I mean, I look back at, like, I was just looking at this, flipping through this, you know, sort of book of, I'm pointing as if you're going to know, it's in my garage. I am pointing to my garage door, in my, you know, this sort of like first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. And like, there's a book of memories. There's like a pocket for each one where you can put your report cards, and you're supposed to like record who your friends were and what you want. And so, and one of the things is, when I grow up, I want to be, and it's so amazing to see like how much the people around you influence you. I don't remember wanting to be a professional bike rider, but my dad was so obsessed with cycling that it really crept in. And so, you know, I consistently, the first like 10 years of my life, whatever else is in there, and a lot of the time it was an actress or like a rock star or, you know, a music teacher or something like that. I always put that I wanted to be a bike rider.
Wow.
And so I definitely was hugely influenced by my dad. And so Barbie doesn't really fall into that, but I definitely was really into Barbie. And I would like to be, I sometimes would like to be the girl who's like, no, I didn't care for Barbie, but I loved Barbie. I loved fashion. I loved dressing her. I loved, you know, I loved her. And I agree with you that whatever issues I've had with, you know, my self-image and body dysmorphia and stuff that a lot of women go through, I would never, I don't, if it's Barbie, it is buried so deep in me that I can't make the association, because I feel like I can come up with other things that made me feel that way. But I never really made the connection with Barbie. Like, I never was like, my waist should be the proportions of a Barbie.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? We talk about the sort of craziness of the Barbie proportions, but I think it's both. I think it probably is bad, and I think she's bad and good. I think all the reasons that you listed that she's fabulous are true. I think that probably all of the reasons that people criticize Barbie are probably also true and valid.
Yeah. I just, you know, always thought like, how, like, and I look back at it now, like, that we kind of took it for granted that she had this great house that she lived in on her
own. All of that's true. I haven't really thought about it that way. You're right.
You know, and we don't really look at it now, but I think we're still in a society that, you know, and there's something wrong with it. I mean, like, look, it's not like a lot of men are out there buying houses on their own either, you know,
right.
But we're still in a society where a lot of, you know, a lot of women need a second income to really, you know,
yeah,
have a home or have certain things in their lives. And it's really, I think, inspiring. Oh, there's the Poochie one. That's amazing. Oh, that's so, I think it's inspiring to have this woman who's like, no, she lives on her own and she's not dependent on a man. And
she does have a dozen careers. You're right.
Yeah. And, you know, and kind of glamorous. And I think, you know, it's not all about having things, but I think it's also, you have to aspire to something, you know, in life also. And that's what I think is so hard. Like, sometimes I meet people and it's like, well, you know, and I think it's like, well, what are you aspiring to? What are your goals? Like, what's your dream for the future? And I feel like that's like one of the places where mine started, was like sort of like looking at, you know, I mean, looking at different things, reading Rolling Stone magazine as a kid. You were like, I want to be where these people are, where these people are writing about. But sometimes I, you know, you're like, you see like people in real ruts, or, and you're like, God, what is it? You know, I don't know. Where do you get your goals from? And
that's a really good point. And but also what's funny for me is that I've just had such nebulous goals in my life. Like I've not been able to really, that's another thing in flipping through the stuff from when I was a kid, like that you sort of see that, you know, they're asking you to set up goals for yourself by saying, when I grow up, I want to be blank. And I was trying to sort of like associate that kid and like, at what point, at what age do you start to understand what those quote unquote goals or aspirations actually entail? Like, what do they require? Like, what is the actual path to getting there? And I think that's why, you know, a lot of little girls first, you know, start out thinking they want to be a ballerina, and then it evolves into something different. But I don't know. I guess I never had, I feel like I should have been more goal oriented, I guess, because I probably was one of those people who, even when I came down here, when I would like meet with agents at first and they were like, well, where do you want to be in 5 years? Or like, what do you want from this business? I had no answer for that. I was like, I don't know. It's probably not going to work out. Number one. I mean, that's really how pragmatic I was.
No, I know. That's my favorite, most out of all the agent questions I hate. I think that's my favorite to hate, because it's like, they like, you know, they criticize you when you like don't. I remember like one agent, I was like, I just want to make money. Like, I don't, you tell me, like, what, let's just, you know, because when you're,
i.e., I want what you want, agent.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, because when you're like, you come from a comedy background, I come from a comedy background, like, you know, we're all hyphenates at this point. Like, right. We might write for sitcoms, we might write for comedy variety, we might do some writing and then on a sketch show, we might also have a recurring on something, a recurring character on another thing. Like, who knows where this is all going to end for any of us when you're in this, you know, kind of when you get into the field this way and stuff. And so it's just so funny to me, because like, then the minute you tell them, if you are like, you know, tell them something, they tell you why it's not going to happen or why it's difficult. Well, you know, that's really hard. Yes, I know it's really hard. That's why I want an agent, or that's why I'm working hard. Or you're like, I don't know what you want me to say. I hate that question. And it's like, yeah, sure, what do you want? We're going to make that happen. And then, you know, 6 months later, you haven't heard from them in 2 weeks or whatever. And you're like, I hate that agent. It's like in the agent book. Yeah.
It's so true. I think I've made something up on the spot. But it's funny, though, because I feel like what I made up on the spot has become more, I didn't know. Wow, it's actually really interesting that you said that. I'm having like a little bit of an Oprah moment, and the sun just came out a little bit in the cloud, so it seems super over the top that I just had that while that was happening. But I think the first agent meeting I took, which by the way was like with someone who would never have represented me, like someone way too big for this kid who had no credits, who just came down from San Francisco. But I think they said, like, who – they said, what do you want? And I was like, I don't know. I really was like, I don't know. And they were like, well, whose career do you admire? Like, who do you admire? And at the time, this was like 8 years ago, I was like, Conan O'Brien. And they were like, oh, like nobody saw that coming. They thought that I was going to say, like, Courtney Cox. Like, she has her own production company and she's an actress and da-da-da. And, but I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I would love to host like a late night talk show or something with, you know, would be like Conan and have a production company and like foster young talent and like that kind of thing. And, but I seriously, I feel like I said that because like, maybe I saw a picture of Conan O'Brien right before I came inside. I mean, I do love Conan. Like, I couldn't love him more, but it wasn't necessarily a goal. But it's funny now looking at my life 8 years later, it's a lot more like hosty than I ever expected when I came down. I had no experience like hosting anything, really. I was just thought I would be, you know,
you put that out there
comedies.
To the universe. That's what it was like, the secret you made.
And
that,
by
you
the way,
that.
I'm a long way from being Conan O'Brien. I'm like 30. If things keep going the way they're going, I'm 30 years away from being Conan. But it is weird that just came up just now. Well, I mean, did you have an answer at any point that felt real to you in terms of goals? Like, I want to write on a show, or I want to create my own, you know, show, or I do want to be an author, or is it like you, just said, which we both feel, which is like, I don't know, can something just work out?
Yeah,
that involves doing something that's fun.
It's really kind of it, and I almost like I'm seriously resentful when I get asked that question. Because I feel like it's a trick question. I really do. I feel like they're posing as these kingmakers. Like, can you tell us your dream? You know, I've been through it so many times with people where it's like, you know, you tell us your dreams and we're going to make it happen. And it's like, my dream would be for you to not take 10 days to return an email. Like, that's so true. I mean, like, let's start. I mean, because that's what the reality then becomes, where you're like, you know, I remember like going through something with some representation. Like, literally, like, I was like a forensic accountant. Like, okay, I emailed you on such and such date about this thing. And 5 days later, you told me you couldn't open the file.
That's a classic.
And then I resent it. And that was 7 days ago. You know, and you're just like, God, like, I wish, you know, I was telling one person once, like, you know, basically she wasn't my agent, but she was an agent who was a friend. And I'm like, look, you return my calls. And she's like, the bar set so low for us. And I'm like, I know. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it is.
So I get resentful about that question. Like, I'm going to tell you this why, because then you're going to tell me you're going to do it. And then again, like I said, you're going to, you know, whatever, not return the
emails.
But
I'm talking about like a conversation with a friend. Like, I'm not talking to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not talking about, I agree with you 100% when it comes to like, there's nothing worse than being asked that from someone that you already don't trust. Like, the second you've met them, you're coming into the relationship like with mistrust and cynicism. But okay. I mean, you know, just like, you know, if you're just sitting in a conversation with someone, like, I've definitely said to like a girlfriend, God, I would love to, you know what I mean? I would love to. Listen, I've said, hey, I would love to not work. I mean, yeah. I've definitely been in moods where I've been like, oh, it'd be so great to just do things that are exciting and fun to me. Like, I don't get paid to do this podcast. It costs me money to do this podcast. And I've never like solicited for money from anyone. You know, I haven't gotten to the place where I'm like, hey guys, if you want to donate to my podcast, here's a way to do that and become a donor or whatever. But if I could just do this, there are some days where it's like, that would just be great.
It is like, I'm kind of in a place after, you know, I was on the suit for 7.5 years and then I left in May. I wrote on the suit for that time. And then I left in May. You know, I knew I had the book coming out. I'd had a screenplay option and I just really wanted to, change. It was just like, you know, and so I am in a place now where it's like, I'm like, what's going to be fun for, like, you know, what's going to be fun for me? I'm out there. I came back. I traveled for about 5 weeks and then I came back. I worked on the Roseanne roast and obviously I've got things that I work on and stuff and pitches and things, but I'm like, what's going to be fun? Like, what's something I can do? Cause remember when this was fun, it's like, you know, I always found it really interesting, and I've said this for years, is that you want to pursue this, you know, entertainment, because this is what you want to do more than anything in the world. And, you know, and maybe there are people you do plays with when you're in your teens or something, and they go on to have other jobs, and maybe they go on to do community theater or children's theater or something in their spare time.
And it gets to just be a joy, like a pleasure. Like, I look forward to doing that show because that's my fun time, not my, oh my God, I have to audition for this thing and I hope they like me and da 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 time.
Right. No, absolutely. And what happens is like, you know, like you're trying to make money, you're trying to like find a way in, you're trying to, you know, whatever, get something going. And you're like, you know, they're like, you know what, selling game shows. Why don't you come up with a game show, Janet? So like next thing you know, you find yourself trying to develop a game show. You don't want to run a game show. Like, you know, and I remember like it was like this, especially like it was like first it was like game shows, then it was reality, then it was cartoons. Like there was always like something at every turn that like you're like, the dream has become so bastardized, I don't even recognize it anymore.
Correct.
Not that like, look, working on the roast was a blast. I had such a great time when I was on the soup and all that kind of stuff. There's still stuff that you like about it, but I am sort of in the place where I'm like, what? Like you're saying with your podcast,
like if you can, like learning how to redefine it for yourself and kind of get back to a place where you're really listening to what you want instead of listening to other people tell you what you want.
Right. Right.
Or what just you really, really want. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist that.
I did like a comedy burlesque show a number of years ago, just because same thing. I was going through all this strife over projects I didn't even care about. you know, and they were still just causing me, like, you know, aggravation. And I was like, I want to just do something for the joy of it. And I want to get up on a stage and I want to dance and I want to tell jokes and I want it to be fun and I want us to look hot. And, you know, and then when that became a problem too, like, you know, we did a couple of different incarnations of that. And then when that started to become like everything else, like trying to hustle people into a space once a week, I was like, okay, we're done. You know, yeah. When people started fighting backstage and, you know, you're like, okay, well, now this
sounds
is...
like someone created a reality show. Inadvertently, people are buying that, Tess. What are you doing?
It was a game show. Who wants to be on my comedy burlesque show?
Oh, no.
But, yeah, so I think about that a lot. Like, what's
I mean, the book seems like that... To me, that seems like a lovely answer, in a sense. I mean, that's at least kind of what I got when I was, you know, reading through it and stuff, is just that felt to me a little bit like the podcast feels to me. Like, that yeah. It would be this sort of like, hey, this is me as a person in my personal life talking about like what's, you know, what I do outside of the business. You know what
I
mean?
Right, right. Like, right. Well, yeah. I mean, what I do, you know, I am a compulsive dinner party thrower. Like, I can't help myself. And I mean, even on a weeknight, if we're at home cooking and I'm on the phone with someone, I'm like, why don't you just come over? And then I'm like, you know,
love that, Tess. I think that's so great.
Oh, thank you. It's fun. It's like really, I am compulsive about it, and I am working on an idea that I think would be like, that is sort of the thing right now, like where it's, you know, basically I have comics over my house for dinner and we cook together and eat. And so it kind of turns into half a panel show because we're talking about
something
events
like that. By the way, no one wants to listen to me pitch anything. So I'm not like, hey, I pitched something and like
this
that
whole
was,
bit,
but
whole
I love
business.
Because I love that too. That's why I connected with you so much when we first met. I was like, yeah. And also I should say that I know, Tessa's husband. I've worked for him, on a couple of shows, actually, when I first moved down here. But
yeah, I guess that was about 8 years ago.
I love that idea. I think that's great. You'd be so great at that. Like, that would be a really cool show.
I think it would be fun. I mean, I'm already getting excited for Thanksgiving. Like, my big thing this year is this is what happens when women are childless, I think, right? I'm like, this is what we're going to do. This is for place cards, because we're really big on place cards. Chris, my husband, actually is really like, he loves place cards. There's a whole thing about it in the book that when the first time we went somewhere where they had place cards, he was like, it was like the answers like to his prayers, like, this, like the clouds, because he's like, no one will sit down when we call everyone to dinner. No one wants to take a seat because no one knows where anyone else is sitting.
Yeah.
And he's like, and meanwhile, I'm trying to get the food to the table and it's getting cold and no one will sit down. He's like, so now he loves place cards. So for Thanksgiving next week, I'm going to make hand turkeys, you know?
Yeah, I love hand turkeys. That's a great idea.
And put people's name inside of them.
Yes.
And that's going to be their place card.
That's fantastic. You went old school.
Old school, but I'm really excited about it. And I'm like, yesterday morning, I was like, well, maybe if I have some time before I go out to this meeting, I'll start making the hand turkeys.
You know what I see in your future is some tissue paper snowflake winter dinner party place cards.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like a good...
Because I really like found sort of like, what do I have around the house that I can, you know.
This is what I would like to see. I would like to see you make a tissue paper or snowflake as a place card. And then even, I know this is messy, old school white Elmer's glue cursive person's name, sprinkle glitter on it.
Oh, I can. Well, I do it with the, I do that with a glue gun,
right?
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good one. But you know what I do at Christmas? This is really, and this isn't found objects. This is actually cost money and gets be obsessive. I usually just have a pine cone and like I have a little place card in the pine cone or whatever. But then next to that, I have an ornament specifically selected for each dinner guest.
I love it. Tess, if you don't, I'm sorry, I know I said this on HuffPost, but if you don't invite me over, I mean, you see my house, so you understand that like aesthetics and things like that are very important to me.
Oh, absolutely.
I am dying to see what a Tess Rafferty dinner party is like. I love everything I'm hearing.
Of course, we'll definitely have you over. Chris would love to see you.
I love it all.
We'll have Christy and her husband, too. We'll have a whole thing.
Blast. Yeah, Gary's great. That would be really fun.
But unfortunately, if it's, you know, the Christmas is the only time I do the specifically selected ornaments for each individual person that they then get to take home with them. And they're very, you know, they all have like a special meaning.
God, I can see how that would get super obsessive, but love the concept. I think that's so great.
It's totally ridiculously obsessive.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. You made me so excited for the holidays, actually. And that reminds me that this episode will come out on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, wonderful.
So I just realized that as you were saying that my podcast comes out on Thursday. I'm not going to make an exception just because it's Thanksgiving. So
people need something to listen to.
Maybe they want something to listen to.
Yeah.
So let's this is, you're going to like think I'm so cheesy because you've already accused me of being too cheesy. Accused me of being too cheesy, but I said you were
optimistic.
I said I was very nice. Yeah. About small towns. But why don't we end the episode? I think we've sort of talked about this stuff anyway, but maybe we end the episode each talking about very quickly something that we feel thankful for, right?
I would love to. That's my one big thing is I do love to express gratitude. Like I really, I don't hope that doesn't sound like really like conceited or so. I love to express gratitude, but I think it's really important. And I think it's, I just think it's really important. Here's another thing. I love sending, I'll still write a thank you note and put it in the mail for like if somebody cooked me dinner sometimes. You know, just like a very, we don't do that anymore.
I love buying thank you cards and having reasons to send them.
Right? Oh God, it's so great. So I'm thankful, like in particular right now in this point in my life, because I did have the book come out, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever, 3 weeks ago. I'm really grateful that I've had a lot of shocking, I don't want to say shocking, like I've had a lot of support come and some from some unexpected places. Like I've had like, you know, like sometimes, my book came out during the hurricane actually, and I was supposed to be in New York for it. And there was all these things kind of going wrong or that weren't getting done and all sorts of stuff. But then like people who, you know, just people you've met who just have always been friends or like kind of offer up support in one form or another with something. And it's just really remarkable, I think. So I feel like the universe has really sent all these great people my way for the book to kind of support it. And my husband's really been amazing, I have to say, because I've been like even Monday night, he was sick. It was his first full day back at work. And I'm like, we're taping it. We got a dinner party tonight. We're taping an episode of Sunday Dinner. So like, you need to come. You're coming to dinner tonight. Like, sorry, they're expecting you. We have a call time. Taking pictures of things and movies of the taping. My signing and all sorts of stuff. So,
well, here's what we should do too. I just had this idea on the fly, but I would love to send a copy of the book to one of the listeners. So why don't we do this, you guys? Because you guys, this is good. Because everybody wins. So I'll buy a copy of your book and it will be my gift to a listener. And everybody knows that I love getting emails and stuff. And I know, guys, sometimes it takes me a little bit longer than I mean it to get back to you. But if you have ever sent me an email and I haven't responded, please send it to me again, because it breaks my heart when I don't get back to you. But if you are interested in a book, and I can tell you that it's charming and wonderful, if you're interested in it, then you should send me an email with like just send me a silly story about like a meal or a party you went to or a party you threw.
Oh, that's great.
And then I'll pick one of them.
Pick one of your favorite.
Yeah, and I'll mail you guys a copy of the book, and then we'll talk about it on the podcast. I haven't done anything like that before, so it'll be really a fun exercise, and it connects me to the listeners, and we'll get your book out there, and that could be a really cool thing.
A dish gone wrong, something horrible that you had to serve someone on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I love
something.
It. This is going to be great. Okay, I'm super excited about that, guys. And
I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
No, yeah, my God, not at all. It gave me the perfect idea. Now I'm patting myself on the back. It gave me a brilliant idea, everyone. Listen, this is not going to come as a surprise to anybody who listens to the podcast. Everyone is so tired of me being so grateful, but I apologize to put the test through this, but I cannot talk about being grateful without talking about the podcast and talking about the listener. I've nothing about what I'm saying is any different than I've ever said when I go off on it, but we are talking about Thanksgiving. My life has completely changed because of this podcast. It is something that I only do once a week, and it has changed my emotional state in terms of how I respond to the rest of the world in such a profound way.
Really?
I cannot tell you how many times I have gotten bad news, or I have gotten up and just felt kind of bummed out for whatever reason, or I've just been tired because I've been working so much. Anything like that, it always seems like in a moment like that, I swear to God, I have like 30 seconds of feeling horrible, and then I'll check my email and I'll get an email. Speaking of the universe sending stuff, that will be the moment that I get an email from one of you guys saying, I'm having a really hard time. My podcast helps me get through, or your podcast helps me get through, or you guys are so funny, or your guests are so amazing, or I didn't know about this thing until I heard about it on your podcast. Now I love this band or whatever. And I don't have any time to feel shitty.
Yeah.
It just, it can't last. And it's because of you guys. So, I couldn't be doing this podcast for a more selfish reason, but I'm really glad that that there are people out there that are getting something back, because I'm completely addicted to it now, because I feel like I get those responses exactly in the moment when I most need them. So it's been really extraordinary. So that's what I'm thankful for.
Well, I think too that art sort of happens twice. You know, like it happens when you create it. Like I wrote the book. But then it really only kind of half happens until people read it and until people enjoy it, or until people are like, I mean, really, like we can't, you know, we can't do what we do without people out there listening and reading and watching and enjoying things. So it really like, you know, without listeners, without watchers or fans or viewers or whatever, we don't get to do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love art happens twice. I think that's a great way to end the podcast. Tess, thank you so much for doing this. I'm really glad that it worked out. And
me too. I had such a great time.
Awesome. Okay, guys. Well, hope to hear from you. Excited to send a book to somebody, and we'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.